Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming along. Today we're going to touch on a couple of new features in Server 2012. One of them is VM monitoring, and the other one is some new guest clustering enhancements. Just give me a sec. Yep. Okay, so we'll cover off what we can do in Server 2008 regarding application health monitoring, and then we'll look at VM monitoring in Server 2012, the architecture, the configuration of it, and some troubleshooting steps that you'll need to know about. Then we'll take a look at some guest clustering enhancements in Server 2012, and then we'll compare guest clustering and VM monitoring and where you might use one or the other. And then we'll look at combining VM monitoring and guest clustering together and see what kind of solution we'll get out of that. So with Windows Server 2008, we could cluster guests and obviously cluster the resources within the guests, which would then allow us to move resources between nodes within a guest cluster, and then we could obviously also move the guest nodes around within a Hyper-V cluster. The host in 2008 R2 could detect if there was a problem with the guest, so if it blue screened and the health is alive wasn't responding anymore. But one of the biggest things we couldn't do, which is in the yellow box, is get the cluster service to actually take remedial action based on something occurring within the guest. So Server 2012 extends on that and gives us some new capabilities. So how does VM monitoring fit together? So it detects application faults inside of the VM. So this is done independent of any guest clustering, so you don't need guest clustering at all. It's the cluster service that runs on top of Hyper-V that takes the remedial action. It's nothing inside of the guest, it's outside of the guest. So you don't need guest clustering, like I mentioned, but you do need Windows Server 2012. So you need Windows Server 2012 as your guest and also as your host. So what kind of things can we monitor? Two main things: services, so any service that's registered inside of the guest in the Services Control Manager. So it could be SQL, IIS, a print spooler, Exchange, or any other third-party application that's installed itself as a service. But we can also monitor for events. So any event ID that's logged in the application log, the system log, or the security log, we can therefore add a monitor to monitor for that event ID. The great thing about event monitoring is that if it's a custom application, you can get your devs to write some custom errors that appear in the log, and then you can take remedial action based on that. So the components that make up VM monitoring. So we have at the top our hosted service, which is, you know, SQL, Exchange, or IIS, which has then registered itself with the Service Control Manager inside of the guest, which then logs errors inside the event log if there's a problem with the service. The VM monitoring actually runs as a scheduled task. So the scheduled task has specialized elevation rights to talk through a new comm interface that's installed with the Hyper-V 2012 guest integration services. And that comm interface actually talks through the VM bus back to the host. It triggers a property in WMI on the Hyper-V host, and then the cluster service gets notified via the VM resource DLL. So, like I mentioned, the service inside the guest has a failure. There's an event ID logged inside of the guest, which VM monitoring then picks up. The scheduled task is triggered, based on that event ID. The task calls the comm component. The comm component sets a VM property inside of the guest, on the host. So the kind of data that's passed from the guest to the host is literally just a flag to say, I'm in a bad state. There's no customer information that's passed from the guest to the host. It's literally just a WMI flag that's set on the host. Then the VM resource DLL picks up that failure during an is-alive call. So during the interval of, by default, it's every 1 minute, the host is triggering to see whether the guest is actually in an okay state. And then if that triggers a failed state, then the cluster service will take remedial action based on whatever's been configured. So it can actually restart the VM or move the VM to another node. So like I mentioned, there's three main recovery steps. So the first one really is the application recovery that's done inside of the guest. So this is where you've got configured under services, your three sets of failure states. So on the first failure, you would have it to restart the service. The second one, restart the service maybe, and the third one might be do nothing. And that's where the guest level HA can kick in. So this allows the cluster service to pick up the failure and reboot the VM. And if we still have a problem, it then gives the host the ability to live migrate the VM to another node in the cluster. So that's all well and good, but how do we configure it? So there's four main ways to configure this. Probably the most common way is going to be via the failover cluster manager, so via the GUI. But you can use PowerShell, and if you're using a remote machine or RSET tools on a different machine, then you can use PowerShell remoting as well to configure it. The other option is actually inside of the guest. So inside the guest, you can run PowerShell to configure the monitoring. There's a few things you need to take into account when you are configuring it via the cluster manager. So the way that the cluster manager talks to the VM to enumerate the services that are actually running and installed on the VM is just a remote RPC call. So the firewall inside of the VM needs to have the exceptions enabled for virtual machine monitoring. And because the cluster is actually making a call to the guest, you need to make sure that the guest can actually talk to the cluster via networking. DNS must be okay. Plus, they've got to be either in the same domain or there's got to be a trust between the two. And like anything else, you've got to be an admin. So that's what virtual machine monitoring will look like inside of the guest that we've got to enable for the firewall rule. And then we can also run a bit of PowerShell. So to configure the guest, the service must be, one of the actions must be set to take no action. So you can have the first failure to take no action or any subsequent failures, but one of them must be take no action. And the reason for that is when take no action is triggered on the service failure, the event ID is logged in the event log and then the task scheduler is actually looking for that. So there's a couple of examples there which are configuration options that they actually won't work. So restarting the service three times is not going to give the event ID a chance to log in. And if you restart the computer in between any of those failures, then it's going to reset the count for the failure monitor. So to configure it on the cluster manager, we simply right-click on the machine. Sorry? Yep. So if you restart the computer, like in the second example there, you're actually restarting the count for the number of times that the service has failed. So you're actually restarting the machine, then when the machine starts up again, if the service fails again, you're hitting first failure again. So you never give it, you're never giving it time to kick in. So we right-click on the virtual machine, go to More Actions, Configure Monitoring, and then we get a list of services that are installed inside of the VM. The other way, like I mentioned, is via PowerShell. So the add cluster VM monitor item commandlet allows us to do this. You must obviously pass in the VM name and then the service that you want to monitor. By default, the host cluster will automatically have enable heartbeat monitoring for the virtual machine turned on. But there are situations where you might want to turn that off. So if you've got a VM that's actually causing a bit of a problem and the VM monitoring is actually kicking in when you don't want it to because you want to do some troubleshooting for a period of time, then you can simply come in here and turn it off and then turn it back on again when you're ready. So let's have a look at how we configure that via the cluster manager. So what I've got here, just for test purposes, is I've got a single node Hyper-V cluster and then a bunch of VMs running on top of that. So what we would do, let's configure it for the file server. More actions, configure monitoring. And we're just going to monitor the principal for now. So as we can see here under monitored services, we're now monitoring the principaler. If you wanted to pick more, you could. So you literally just put tick boxes in the services that you want to monitor. So let's have a look at it in action. Hopefully the demo gods are going to be good to me today. So we can see here that the principaler service is running. So what I'm going to do is just use PSKill, just to kill that service. Before I do that, what I'll do is I'll just show you what I've got configured under services. Right, so we've got the first time it dies, it's going to restart the service, and then the second time, VM monitoring should kick in and restart the VM. Okay, so we can see that the service is gone. Should restart again. Okay, let's get rid of it again. There we go. So like I mentioned, we can configure this inside of the guest as well. And if you wanted to configure event log monitoring, then there was no option in the failover cluster manager to actually configure the event log monitoring. So you've got to do that inside of the guest. So we would use the add cluster VM monitored item PowerShell commandlet. And in order to get those commandlets in the guest, you need to install the failover cluster manager tools. Because we're configuring it inside of the guest and the host can be in totally different domains. So you can have, the guest can be a workgroup machine, it can be in a completely different domain. And they did this because of the hosted providers scenario. So in a hosting scenario, you're never going to have a VM that's going to be in the same domain as the host. So with the cluster manager tools, when you install it, you get a bunch of new commandlets. I just put them there so you guys could have a reference for later on. But the main ones that we're going to use today is the add cluster monitored item commandlet. All right, so let's configure VM monitoring inside of the guest. Okay, so what I'm going to do is set up monitoring for an event log entry. And what I'll do is just show you that our monitoring that we set up before is still there. So we can have a look inside of the guest. So we're still monitoring for the spooler service. Now what I'm going to do is use the event create command and create an event log entry in the application log, and then we'll set up a monitoring item for that entry. So I've just actually created that in the event log, and there was no VM monitoring set up, so therefore the machine hasn't rebooted. Let's just set up the monitoring. So you pass in the log that you want to monitor, the event source, and then the event ID as well. Oops. So if we do get monitored item now, we'll see that I'm monitoring that event ID and the spooler service as well. So let's just create that event ID again in the event log. There, it was creating an error in the event log. That's what came up. So there we go. Any questions at all on that?
Can you schedule that to occur? So that if I want, say, a print server that's lost a spooler to reboot, but I don't want it to occur during, say, 9 to 5,
yep.
If the event occurs outside of that, feel free to reboot?
I'd have to check. I don't think so, because of the... So I can show you and have a look. It creates the task schedule. So the task schedule basically is always monitoring for the service to actually fail. So I'm pretty sure there's no way that you can actually set that to happen on a defined schedule. Sorry, what was that? Yeah, I was going to say that's where you would then use something on top of this VM monitoring like Orchestrator. I think even Symantec are coming up with a suite to actually sit on top of VM monitoring to give you that kind of flexibility. Any other questions?
Yeah, during the migration, it shuts down on the old host and brings it up on the new host, is that correct? So it's a cold migration?
If it's migrating to a new host, you mean? So it does a clean shutdown,
yep.
So it shuts down the VM, and then live migrates it. I'll cover that off in the next bit. Cool. Any other questions?
Can the service recovery actions be scripted as well? To go around clicking, take an action?
Yeah, so if you've got, you can configure that all via PowerShell if you want. Yep, absolutely. So let's have a look at some troubleshooting steps that you guys might need to look at when you're configuring this. So like I mentioned, you'll get an error if you're trying to configure a service inside of a guest where you don't have any connectivity. So again, you've got to check the firewall settings. DNS is another big thing. If there's no DNS name resolution between the host and the guest, then this will fail as well. Part of those new commandlets that you can run on the host is a get cluster resource, and that allows you to use PowerShell to get the status of a VM. So if you've got a VM in a failed state, in the GUI you'll see that it's running but the application's critical, but the PowerShell command, you can also get information out of that as well. So when there's an error with a guest and the event ID has been logged in the failover clustering log, 1250 is the event ID that's logged inside of the host. So that's one thing that you can check. If for some reason it's not doing what you want it to do, then you can go and check and see whether it's actually logging any event IDs as well. And like I mentioned, there's a custom custom task that's configured to do the monitoring. So you can go into Task Scheduler and go to the failover clustering folder and have a look and see if there's been a problem with the task. So it's got the error codes there as well, just like a normal scheduled task. And then if it was last run or if there was an error, it'll come up and let you know. The cluster log, so this is the host cluster log, has a lot of information in it around detailed steps that it will go through to actually log that there's a problem with the VM and the failover steps that it's going through. So that's another good place that you can look at. The cluster remediation, so like the gentleman asked the question about, you know, if you've got a VM that's playing up and the service keeps restarting and you've configured monitoring for it, there's some thresholds that you need to make sure you're aware of. So the first one really is the retry period and the retry threshold. So this is the amount of times that a guest can have the failure and for the cluster to do remedial action. The default is one failure within 15 minutes. So this obviously stops the problem where you continually have a problem with the service, VM monitoring is configured and the VM is restarting all the time. There's a retry period on failure state as well, which is set. Then you've also got the failover period and the failover threshold. So this is used when the cluster manager is taking remedial action and moving the guest to another node within the cluster. So by default, it's set to once every 6 hours. So basically, these are configured so that you can stop that whole problem with the VM keep bouncing around, the service having a problem, and it's moving to different nodes in the cluster and causing you problems. The is-alive polls, so that's the poll for checking to see whether the VM's in a healthy state. By default, it's set to a minute. For the demo, I actually set it to 5 seconds so that we could not sit around for a minute, wait for it to happen. But by default, it's a minute. So depending on what you want to configure in your environment, you might want to leave that at a minute, increase it or decrease it, depending on when you want the cluster service to kick in. Pardon? You can be more granular with it. Yep. Correct. Yep. So here you can see the settings on the VM. So you can change the settings per VM if you need to. Any questions on VM monitoring before I move on to guest clustering at all? The problem.
May not even fix the problem.
Yep.
I could understand, like in a space sense or limited space, but for it could become a valid
Yep. Yeah, so for me, the monitoring of services is probably not the really great thing about VM monitoring, unless you've got a custom-developed application that's got a service that you're having problems with, and maybe the service dies because it loses connectivity to a database or something like that. But really, I see the value in the event log monitoring, so where you can be quite specific about a error that's logged in the event log after a chain of events that's probably happened. So you might have a couple of services that have failed, and then based on that, you see an event ID that's logged in the event log, and then you configure monitoring for that particular event ID. So you know once it's hit that event ID, there's a problem with the VM, and you should try and restart it.
Yeah.
But really, it's I see it as a framework that you can kind of build on. So because it's logging stuff in the event log, you can pull out those event IDs and then use something like Orchestrator to actually enhance it, and then you'll start seeing vendors like Symantec, maybe DoubleTake as well, actually building stuff on top of this. Okay, so let's have a look at some guest clustering enhancements. So in Windows Server 2008 R2, we could have a guest cluster, but we were kind of limited in how we could configure that. So it was iSCSI only. So there's no other options in Hyper-V. And it might be configured and look something like this. So you'd have a separate iSCSI network, which then your guests connect to, and you present the LUNs down to the guests that way. But for a lot of people, that's a bit of a problem because they don't have iSCSI in their environments. So what the Hyper-V team have done is created a virtual fiber channel adapter. So this allows you to configure VMs to basically have worldwide node names and port names and actually announce themselves on the SAN network. So it uses MPIV to register the worldwide names and the network name and the port name. But you can still use iSCSI if you've already got an iSCSI network. But really a new option for a fiber channel if you want to use it. So the new configuration might look something like that. So your VM would have a virtual fiber channel adapter, and you would present LUNs down to it just like any other physical host. No difference.
So you're deprecating
iSCSI? No, it's still supported. Okay. Yep, you can still use it if you've already got iSCSI networks in place. No, it's only fiber channel at the moment, fiber channel adapter. So you get a new virtual storage manager option inside of the host. And that's where you configure your virtual fiber channel SAN. So inside of the guest, we would add a virtual fiber channel adapter. And we've got a couple of address sets there for worldwide network names and port names. And what they've done is actually pretty neat. They've actually enabled you to copy that configuration to the clipboard, which you can then copy and paste into an email or a service ticket and send off to the SAN team so they can configure all the LUN masking. So you can then present LUN straight down to your VM. But there's one thing that's quite interesting about that picture, and that's that I've got a single adapter, virtual adapter, and two sets of worldwide names and worldwide port names. So can anyone tell me why we might need two? Live migration? Very good. So live migration. If we have a VM sitting on server A, we're using worldwide name 1. You live migrate it to server B. It's copying the VM across to the other host. It's got to still maintain connectivity to those same LUNs. So it's going to use worldwide name 2. Does the failover, MPIV, VM still runs on the other node. If we want to live migrate it to another node, same thing occurs, flips back and uses worldwide name one. So we only ever need two worldwide names to do the live migration between different nodes in the cluster. It's another option, yes. So part of the cluster validation now has been extended, so it'll validate HPAs as well. So make sure you run that cluster validation before setting this up on the hosts. So some of the other features we get inside of guest clusters now, we pretty much get the same kind of features that you would get in a physical cluster with Windows Server 2012. So we can run clustered shared volumes inside of a guest now, which means we get all the great enhancements that are available for backup vendors, filter drivers like antivirus and stuff like that. Because it fully supports clustered shared volumes, you can run clustered file servers inside of your guests as well. And the other things that you get, I don't know if anybody else has been to other sessions, so you've got node draining and the cluster aware updating as well, which is all part of clustering in Server 2012 now. So when might you use guest clustering and when might you use VM monitoring? So guest clustering, the way I see it is you would use guest clustering still for any workload that you would normally set up a physical cluster for and that you need that high level of availability. So if your applications like Exchange, SQL, maybe a file server, so you'd still use a guest cluster for that. And VM monitoring you can use for any other application. And really the VM monitoring, like you saw, it actually causes downtime on the VM. So if you don't need that high level of availability for the application, then VM monitoring is a great option for that. So what happens when we combine the two? So on first failure of a service inside of a guest VM, it would fail over to the other guest VM node and then fail back if you wanted to. On the second or third failure, based on the service control manager configurations, then it would restart the other VM on another node and then allow you to migrate that resource back across to the other VM. So the way you would configure this is to actually monitor the cluster service inside of the guest. So basically on first failure, we restart the service, which was then the first step. And then the second failure, we would actually restart the VM on another node in the cluster. So let's just have a look at guest clustering. So what I've got here already is a two-node guest cluster on top, underneath my Hyper-V cluster. And so what I've done is I've prepped a third node, and literally all I've done to prep it is add it to the domain, add it to the network. For this demo, all I'm doing is configuring, I'm just using iSCSI. So my file server 1 VM is actually an iSCSI target. So my guests are actually using that to get LUNs from. And literally just to add a new node to the cluster now is literally right-click, add node. There we go, three nodes in a cluster. So as I said, we can configure clustered shared volumes. So this cluster disk here is what I want to use for clustered shared volume. So we can simply just add it to clustered shared volumes, and away we go. And then we can move that shared volume around to different nodes without any issues. Any questions at all? So just to recap, VM monitoring is a really good, simple solution that you can use when you don't want to use clustering. It's pretty flexible, so you can monitor any service or any event ID that's logged in the event log. And you've got plenty of options for configuring it, PowerShell, and then obviously you can build on top of that with Orchestrator as well. And guest clustering, now I think you know, you're going to start to see a lot more people use guest clustering because of the virtual fiber channel adapter support. There's a lot of people that invested a lot of time and money in fiber channel SANs, so I think we'll start to see a lot more guest clusters used. And yeah, it's the Windows Server 2012 is the best platform to use to virtualize Windows. Any questions? Completely separate.
Yep. So when you, so they just appear on the fabric and the SAN administrators.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Yep, they announce themselves on the fabric. Yep. So the host is literally just passing those worldwide names through onto the existing fiber channel adapter that is in the host already. Any other questions? What's that, sorry?
Do you have any additional resources like further reading?
There's a couple of highlighted links inside of the deck already. Yeah, so you'll be able to grab those. Yep. Yep.
How robust is the shutdown? Does it graceful shutdown? The machine doesn't shut down, does it have a timeout?
Yeah, so it does a graceful shutdown, and then for some reason, if the VM ends up in a in a state where it's not responding, then the cluster service will actually take over and reboot that VM.
So that's about 1 minute is
alive? No. So there's another setting which is in the cluster so that if the heartbeat to the guest integration services doesn't respond after a period of time, then the cluster will actually kick in and restart the VM. That was in Server 2008 as well. Yep. So that still exists. No, the guests are establishing the iSCSI connections in that scenario. Yep, so you need the iSCSI initiators installed on the guests,
okay.
And the guests have got to make the connection. So the iSCSI network has got to be accessible from within the guests. Yep. Okay, no worries, thank you.